presentation to PI. It's great to be back here. Right, so today I'll be talking about the problem of classifying the simulation complexities of extended Clifford circuits. Okay, in other words, how hard is it to classically simulate this class of circuits which are called extended Clifford circuits? Right, this is based on the following two papers, the first of which is in QIC. This one is on various extensions of Clifford circuits. Right, and the second paper in CCC, right, this one talks about conjugated Clifford circuits. Okay, so this was joint work with Adam Boland from Berkeley and Joe Fitzsimons. Right, so here's the outline of my talk. Okay, I'll first start by giving some motivation. All right, so why are we interested in this problem of classifying extended Clifford circuits? Okay, and in the second part of the talk, I'll look at classifying various extensions of Clifford circuits. Okay, and in the third part of the talk, I'll focus on one particular example of an extended Clifford circuit. Okay, these are called conjugated Clifford circuits. Okay, we'll be studying how hard is it to classically simulate these classes of circuits. All right, so let's start with some motivation. All right, so our starting point is what's called the extended Church-Turing thesis. Right, this is a thesis whose goal is to formally capture the notion of what it means to efficiently compute something in the physical world. All right, so here's what it says. All right, any realistic model of computation can be efficiently simulated on a Turing machine. All right, so let's first unpack some of the terms in this statement. Okay, so here, realistic means that it should be physically realizable in principle. Okay, something that's allowed by the laws of physics. Okay, something you can implement in the lab. Okay, and examples are like the Turing machine model itself or the RAM model. Okay, these are real-world approximations. Okay, abstract models which approximate real-world computers. Okay, a non-example of a realistic model is like the analog computers. Right, these are computers that compute using infinite precision arithmetic. Okay, and it's not realistic, okay, in our world with only where we have access to only finite precision measurements. Right, the next term is efficient. Right, so in this talk, efficient will always mean polynomial time. Right, in the context of simulation, it means that the simulation takes at most a polynomial overhead. Right, so what the extended Church-Turing thesis basically says, right, is that the Turing machine model is sufficient to capture the notion of efficient simulation in the physical world. Okay, you could think of it as a bridge between physics and computer science. Okay, if you want to make statements about what sorts of problems are efficiently computable in the world, all right, you have to take into account the laws of physics. Right, so that sort of ties up notions between physics and computer science. Okay, and ultimately it's a falsifiable claim. Right, you could go out to the real world and sort of find models that can violate the extended Church-Turing thesis, right, that will show that it's false. Okay, so it's something that's testable. Right, so since this talk is going to be about quantum computers, okay, the question we ask is, right, do quantum computers violate the extended Church-Turing thesis? Right, and to address this question, let's first ask two sub-questions. Right, the first question is, are quantum computers a realistic model of computation? In other words, can we build scalable and fault-tolerant quantum computers in the lab? They can take larger and larger instances of inputs. Right, and if this is the case, right, can we prove that a quantum computer, right, cannot be efficiently simulated by a classical computer? In other words, are there problems which a quantum computer can solve efficiently but a classical computer cannot? Right, so the approach we'll take to answering such questions is by studying what's called the restricted model of quantum computation. Right, so let me say what these are. So a universal quantum computer is one that captures the full power of quantum computation. Right, you could think of it in the circuit model. Okay, these gates, the Hadamard gate, the T gate, okay, which is the fourth root of the Pauli Z gate, and the C naught gate, okay, they form a universal set of gates. So we say a model is restricted. Right, if we place restrictions on possibly the types of inputs you allow in the circuit, or the types of measurements, or even on the structure of the circuit itself. Right, so examples of restricted models are Clifford circuits, match gate circuits, IQP circuits, or DQC1 circuits. Can I just say briefly what each of these are? So Clifford circuit here is defined to be a circuit that starts with the all zero state. Okay, you then apply the polynomial number of gates from this gate set, get Hadamard, phase, and CZ gates. Okay, these are in the Clifford group. Okay, then you measure a subset of the qubits in the computational basis. Right, so you could ask the question like, can the Clifford circuits be efficiently simulated on a classical computer? Right, and the first observation to make is that these gates, HS and CZ, right, do not form a universal set of gates. Okay, and I guess one of the central results about Clifford circuits is that it can be efficiently simulated on a classical computer. Right, this is the content of the Gottesman-Knill theorem, okay, which we'll talk about more in this later in this talk. Right, the second class of circuits are the match gate circuits. Okay, these are circuits where you start with a product state, right, state of this form. You then apply nearest neighbor match gates, which are gates of this form. So they act separately on the even and odd parity sectors. Okay, and where the determinant of A is equal to the determinant of B. And then you measure a subset of these qubits in the computational basis. So what's known about the match gate circuits is that, right, they can be efficiently simulated on a classical computer as well. Right, this was proved by Valiant. Okay, the next class of circuits are the IQP circuits. These are circuits where you start with all zero state. Okay, you then apply a Hadamard gate to each register of the circuit. You then apply a polynomial number of diagonal gates. Okay, then you apply Hadamards again, and then you do a measurement. Right, again, you can ask, are these circuits efficiently simulable? Right, and one of the perhaps surprising results is that if you make some assumptions in complexity theory, right, then there is no efficient algorithm that can sample from the output distribution, okay, of such circuits. Okay, this was a result by Bremner, Joza, and Shepard. All right, so the plausible complexity assumption here is that the polynomial hierarchy does not collapse. Okay, so well, let me just say what the polynomial hierarchy is. All right, so you could think of the polynomial hierarchy as a generalization of the classes P and NP. Right, so P is at the zeroth level of the hierarchy, and NP is at the first level. So P is a set of problems for which you can efficiently solve on a classical computer. NP is a set of problems for which for which you can easily verify solutions on a classical computer. Okay, and co-NP in this case is the set of all problems, right, whose complements are in NP. So these two are in the first level. And you could form higher levels of the hierarchy by thinking of using oracles that can solve NP problems. Right, so the second level, NP to the NP, okay, the set of problems whose solutions you can verify efficiently. Okay, if you had a machine, an NP machine with access to an NP oracle. Right, and the third level, likewise, you can say it's the set of problems you can verify efficiently, okay, if you had access to an NP to the NP machine. Okay, the union of all these classes is called the polynomial hierarchy. Right, and just as it's widely believed that the classes P and NP are different, okay, I guess complexity theories conjecture that each level of the hierarchy is distinct. Right, so when we say that and what you can show is that if any two levels of the hierarchy are equal to each other, right, then the whole hierarchy would collapse to that level. Right, so saying that the polynomial hierarchy does not collapse, right, is essentially saying that each level of the hierarchy is distinct. Okay, when it does not collapse, we also say that the polynomial hierarchy is infinite. Okay, the next class are the DQC1 circuits. Right, these are circuits where you start with one pure state. Everything else is in a maximally mixed state. You then apply a universal set of gates, like H, T, and C naught. Okay, then you measure one qubit in the computational basis. Right, and the result regarding DQC1 circuits, right, is that, like, similar to IQP circuits, there is no efficient algorithm, okay, that can sample from the output distribution of such circuits. Right, but this is slightly different from the IQP case. Right, note that in DQC1 circuits, the number of output registers being measured is just one. And so different proof techniques need to be used to prove such a hardness result. Okay, so here's a summary of some of the models we talked about. Okay, here on the left side, you have the efficiently simulable circuits. Clifford and match gates are examples. And on the right side, you have circuits which are hard to simulate if you assume the polynomial hierarchy does not collapse. And IQP and DQC1 are also suspected to not be universal for quantum computation. Okay, so these are examples of what we call intermediate models of quantum computation. Okay, this is a model whose computational power is strictly in between that of P, right, polynomial time, and something that's universal. Right, but there's a model that's believed to not be universal or classically symbolable. Right, so let's circle back and see how these intermediate models relate to the extended Church-Turing thesis. Right, recall that to violate the extended Church-Turing thesis with quantum computers, we want to show that they are a realistic model of computation, okay, that cannot be officially simulated by a classical computer. Okay, in other words, we want to be able to build large quantum computers, can demonstrate some sort of a super polynomial separation, okay, between their power and that of classical computers. Here, the problem with this is that it's hard to perform this with the current technology that we have. So perhaps the less ambitious goal is to try to just perform some sort of a well-defined task using a quantum computer that's beyond the ability of any state-of-the-art classical computers. Right, such a goal has come to be called quantum computational supremacy. And here the goal is not to perform something that's useful, right, but just to show that there's a task you can perform with a quantum computer, okay, that you cannot simulate or replicate with a classical computer. So why study intermediate models? Right, firstly, they could be easier to implement, okay, because they're not believed to be universal. They could be easier to implement in the lab. Okay, moreover, these intermediate models already suffice to generate distributions, okay, which cannot be classically simulated efficiently. Okay, so you do not need universal quantum computation in order to achieve such a hardness result. Okay, but there's a third reason for studying these intermediate models. Okay, remember that one of the questions raised by the extended Church-Turing thesis is whether quantum computers are more powerful than classical ones. Right, so if they are more powerful, then we would like to understand the origin of this quantum speedup. So you could start with, say, a classically simulable model, okay, like Clifford circuits or IQP circuits. And suppose adding ingredients to this model now produces a model that's hard to simulate classically. Right, then those ingredients can be regarded as being sort of an essential resource for quantum computational speedup. Right, so what intermediate models help us to do is understand this classical quantum boundary. Okay, what makes quantum computers more powerful than classical ones? Right, so that's the end of the first part of my talk. Are there any questions? All right, if not, let's talk about the extended Clifford circuits. Okay, before that, I'll recall some definitions of what Clifford circuits are. So one way to define them is through the Pauli group. So the Pauli group is a set of operators, okay, which are of the following form. So it's a tensor product of Pauli matrices, okay, and multiplied by a phase factor of I to the k. And that's just to make this a group, the closed under multiplication. Right, and the n-qubit Clifford group is defined to be the normalizer of the Pauli group in the unitary group. In other words, right, these are the set of transformations which keep the Pauli group invariant under conjugation. Okay, and the elements of the Clifford group are called Clifford operations. So one thing you can show is that an operator is a Clifford operator, okay, if and only if it can be implemented by a circuit, okay, consisting of the following gates. So earlier I mentioned that the Hadamard phase and C0 gates are sufficient, right, to implement any Clifford operations. Okay, and this claim is talks about the equivalence between this first definition and the second definition. So a Clifford circuit, okay, otherwise known as a stabilizer circuit, okay, is one that consists of these basic Clifford gates. And for what we're considering, we also allow single qubit intermediate measurement gates, okay, in the computational basis. So you're allowed to perform measurements in the middle of the circuit, okay, and they could be adaptive, right? So you could what you perform later on could depend on the results of these intermediate measurements. Right, so Clifford circuits have numerous applications in quantum computation. Right, they include quantum error correction, measurement-based quantum computation. Right, and they're rich enough to encompass many results many features, right, which we regard as being quantum, right? Because you can produce maximally entangled states to them. You can implement the quantum teleportation protocol with just Clifford circuits. Right, but as mentioned earlier, despite these quantum features, these Clifford circuits cannot, in fact, be cannot, in fact, provide any speed up over classical computation, okay, because they can be officially simulated on a classical computer. So what we're going to talk about here is how robust is this theorem, the Gauss-Newton theorem, okay, to changes in its ingredients. Okay, by this, I mean that does the theorem still hold if we make changes to, say, the ingredients in the Clifford circuit? Okay, or if we use different notions of efficient simulation? Okay, so circuits with these different ingredients are what we call extended Clifford circuits. So here are the goals. All right, first, we want to discuss various extensions of Clifford circuits, can classify different notions of classical simulation of quantum computation. And then we want to determine which extended Clifford circuits are officially classically simulable. And for those which we think are not classically simulable, okay, the goal is to provide evidence, okay, based on computational complexity assumptions. Right, so it's unlikely that you can prove unconditional separation, I mean, such as the status and complexity theory. Okay, but the hope is that if you make some plausible assumptions in complexity theory, you can show some of, you can prove that some of these circuit classes are hard to simulate efficiently. Okay, so we'll consider three types of ingredients of Clifford circuits. The first ingredient are basically the types of inputs. Okay, so we'll compare computational basis inputs with product state inputs. Okay, so the inputs could either be in this form, okay, or on a product basis. Right, the second type of ingredient, okay, are the nature of the intermediate measurements. So we'll compare adaptive measurements to non-adaptive ones. So an adaptive measurement is such, is one that whose measurement result, okay, influences what you perform next. It also decides what kinds of measurements or what sorts of operations you perform subsequently in the circuit. And a non-adaptive circuit is one which is predetermined. In other words, all the operations that you are going to perform is fixed beforehand. It does not depend on the intermediate measurement results. Right, and then the third kind of ingredient are the outputs. So we consider computational basis outputs compared to product state outputs. Okay, so these three different types of ingredients give us 2 to the 3, which is 8 different choices. And we'll look at how the interplay between the ingredients affect the classical simulation complexity. Okay, but before that, there are also different notions of classical simulation. Okay, the two most well-known notions are, I guess, strong and weak simulation. So a strong simulation is one that calculates the output of a certain calculates the probability of a certain outcome. In other words, a strong simulator will take as input a description of the circuit, okay, as well as a subset of registers, as well as a bit string, and the output a number between 0 and 1, okay, which is the probability of obtaining that certain string, okay, when the circuit is being measured. Okay, this is to be contrasted with weak simulation, okay, which is about sampling. Right, so a weak simulator is one that samples from the same output distribution as the quantum circuit. So these are different notions. Or you can see that, in fact, strong simulation is a stronger notion. So strong simulation implies weak simulation, okay, but not the other way around. Okay, being able to just being able to sample does not mean you can calculate the probabilities exactly. We're going to look at two more fine-grained notions of simulation. These are called strong FN and weak FN notions. Okay, FN here denotes the size of the register, the number of registers, the size of the output, so the number of registers that you measure at the end of the circuit. So if I fix a function FN, let's say FN is equal to N, strong N simulation is defined to be, right, the computation that calculates output probabilities of strings which are of size N. Likewise, weak FN simulation is about sampling from circuits where the number of outputs is equal to F of N. Right, so here's a relationship between the different notions of simulation. Okay, here we restrict our attention to cases where Fn is either 1 or n. So strong simulation is the strongest notion here. Okay, this implies strong 1 and strong n. And strong simulation, okay, as discussed earlier, implies weak simulation. Okay, and strong 1 and weak simulation both imply weak 1 simulation. Okay, this is the weak 1 is the weakest notion, right? Just sampling from just one output register. The arrows mean the arrows mean that efficient simulation here implies an efficient simulation here. All right, so this is our task. Okay, we have eight different combinations of ingredients and five different notions of simulation. Okay, and the task is to look at, for each of these classes, right, how hard is it to classically simulate it? All right, so I guess the first question we ask is, where does the original Gottesman-Tunnell theorem fit?
Sorry. I've forgotten. What's the difference between strong n again and just strong?
Right, so strong simulation means the number of registers in the output is not decided beforehand. So my algorithm can receive as input any length. So in some sense, strong simulation is sort of the union over all Fn of strong Fn. So just being able to calculate, strong n simulation, it doesn't imply you can do strong simulation. Okay, strong n simulation means you can calculate joint probabilities. Okay, but to do strong simulation, you need to do not just joint probabilities but also marginals. Right, to calculate a marginal from a joint, you might need exponential time in general. Right, so this does not imply strong simulation. Right, so where does the original Gottesman-Tunnell theorem fit in this table? Well, the answer is here. Right, so I guess in the original paper, it was considering adaptive circuits with computational basis inputs and outputs, and it was considered in the weak sense. Right, so this result here immediately implies that these three other boxes are also classically simulable, okay, because these are special cases of this one. Right, if you can efficiently simulate adaptive circuits, then you can also efficiently simulate non-adaptive ones. Right, so which other cases are efficiently simulable? Okay, it turns out that you can show that these three other cases are also efficiently simulable. Right, so P here means that you can solve this problem in polynomial time. Okay, and some of these results have been studied in previous papers. So JV4 here means you can refer to Joza and Vandenes paper, theorem 4, okay, where they prove some of these results. Okay, and the new results are those marked theorems. Theorems 1 to 6. All right, so theorem 5, for example, says that the class of product state inputs, non-adaptive, and product state outputs, extended Clifford circuits, have an efficient strong 1 simulation. In other words, circuits of this form can be efficiently simulated in the strong 1 sense. So I'll just quickly go through the proof. Right, so P0 and P1 are the probabilities of calculating, of outputting 0 and 1 respectively. So since this is equal to 1, it suffices to be able to calculate P0 minus P1. Right, and by Bond's rule, you can express this in terms of this inner product. And the trick here is that, well, the single qubit unitary, okay, can be expressed as a linear combination of the Pauli matrices. Right, so we can then act U on the Z state by conjugation, and that will produce 16 terms here. Right, and since this is itself a Pauli matrix, if we conjugate it by the Clifford operator B, you get another Pauli operator as a result. So essentially, the difference P0 minus P1 can be written as this sum. Okay, and it's a sum over 16 terms, okay, where each of the terms can be computed efficiently. Right, so if you go through the algebra, you can check that, well, this is correct, and And because this is a sum over only a constant number of terms, okay, you can officially compute this. Okay, so there's an example of a proof, right, of theorem 5. Right, so these boxes also imply the other cases in red, okay, which are special cases of these. Okay, and it turns out that that these are the only cases which are classically simulable efficiently. So we're going to show that every other case is hard to simulate. Okay, so before we talk about the other cases, I'm going to say something about magic states. So we know that Clifford plus T gates are universal for quantum computation. Okay, and in fact, the T gate can be simulated by the following gadget. Okay, so this is an example of a post-selection, this is an example of an adaptive gadget, okay, where you start with a product input. Okay, and then based on your measurement, your intermediate measurement outcome here, you perform S gate. Right, if x is equal to 0, you do not perform the S gate. If x is equal to 1, you perform the S gate. So it's an example of an adaptive measurement. And since you can simulate the T gate by this gadget, okay, what this shows is that this case here, okay, if you have input product states and adaptive measurements, then you produce a circuit that's universal for quantum computation. Right, so that's what the QC means here. And this also implies these other results, okay, which are more general cases. Okay, if this is universal, then this is also universal. So one question you could ask is, right, remember that to produce this result, you need both input product states as well as adaptive measurements. Right, so what happens if you have input product states but no adaptive measurements? Is that still universal for quantum computation? Right, so what Joza and Vandenesh showed was that by sort of using the same trick as before, the gadget, but replacing the adaptivity with post-selection, you can show that such circuits are hard to simulate, okay, unless the polynomial hierarchy collapses. So we believe that this class of circuits are not necessarily universal, okay, but they're hard to simulate, okay, if we assume that the polynomial hierarchy does not collapse. Okay, and similar result can be proved for these output. These circuits with output products, meaning product measurements. Right, and so this will also imply these two results, and that completes the classification of weak simulation. Right, the next case to consider are these cases. Okay, what happens when you have strong simulation? Okay, and you are interested in say the case where you have non-adaptive input, in-prod and out-bits. Right, that's theorem 1. Okay, so I'll just quickly go through the proof of this theorem. Right, so you start with a 3CNF formula, okay, in conjunctive normal form. Right, and then from this formula, you can form a quantum circuit, okay, that acts on the computational basis states in this way. Okay, where basically outputs the function f here. Okay, and now for each T gate, okay, you introduce an ancilla and you replace the T gate with a C naught gate. Okay, this will form a resulting circuit which we call AF. Okay, once we form AF, we can then construct this circuit, okay, where you have magic magic state inputs here, computational basis inputs here. You apply x here to this input, Hadamards here. And then you measure all the output registers. Okay, what you can show is that the probability of obtaining a zero outcome is related to the gap of the function f, right, where the gap is defined to be the difference between the number of zeros and the number of ones of the function f. Right, and what's known about the gap is that because f is a degree 3, f is a 3CNF formula, right? So computing the gap is sharp p hard. Right, so because computing the gap is sharp p hard, it is also implies that computing the probabilities is sharp p hard. Right, so that completes the proof of theorem 1 here. And you can do similar tricks for the other sharp B cases. It basically, the idea is to show that if you can efficiently simulate these circuits, in other words, compute the output probabilities, then you can also solve some sharp B hard problem. Right, and this will imply that these other cases are also sharp B hard.
Sorry, can you say something about the adaptive inbits and outbits case?
Adaptive inbits, outbits.
Yeah, because now you don't have any Magnet states or non-Clifford measurements.
Right. So this was the original Gottesman-Kinder theorem, right? Where you can. So if you just use the stabilizer formalism, you can do weak simulation of that. So you're asking about.
I'm talking about this strong.
Right. Okay. So you're asking about how you can show that this is sharp B hard.
Yeah.
Right. So the idea is that when you have adaptive measurements, right, each time you do an adaptive measurement, you have a set of possible outcomes. Right. If you have say there are two outcomes per adaptive measurement, if there are n different intermediate measurements, and each of them produces a different outcome, right, to calculate the probabilities, you have to keep track of all the different cases. And so there are exponentially many outcomes that could result, okay, based on which branch you pick in each adaptive measurement.
So it's not really anything about quantum. It's just this would be true of a randomized.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, right. So calculating the probabilities exactly, that's going to be hard, just because you're gonna keep track of an exponential number of cases. Right. So. That completes the classification of these extended Clifford circuits. Yeah. So now in the third part of the talk, I'll look at a particular class of an extended Clifford circuit. Okay, one we have not discussed before. Okay, these are called conjugated Clifford circuits. Okay, so these circuits are of the following form. Right, you pick some single qubit unitary, we call it U. Okay, and then instead of the Clifford group, which is generated by the Hadamard phase and CZ gates, okay, you conjugate each of these operators by the single qubit unitary. So instead of H, you apply U dagger H U. Instead of S, you apply U dagger S U. Okay, and similarly for CZ, you do it for each qubit. So you start with a computational basis state. Okay, then you apply gates from this gate set. And then you measure all the qubits in the computational basis. Right, so an alternative way of thinking of this is that you can group all the effect of U and U dagger, you can push it to the sides of the circuit. Okay, that's because whenever you have internal U and U dagger gates, they cancel each other out. Right, so this is equivalent to this model where you start with the all zero state. Okay, you then apply the tensor product of unitaries U, okay, followed by the Clifford gates, followed by the U daggers, and then do a measurement in the computational basis. Okay, so let's compare this model with some of the previous models. All right, so remember that for IQP circuits, the idea was that the diagonal gates are classically simulable. Okay, but if you conjugate the diagonal gates by the Hadamard gate, and these become hard to simulate. So we sort of want to ask a similar question for the Clifford circuits. So the Clifford circuits themselves are easy to simulate, okay, but if you conjugate them by a single qubit unitary U, right, do they still remain hard to simulate? All right, this result also differs from the previous cases we talked about. So in one of the boxes just now, okay, we talked about Clifford circuits with product inputs. Right, the difference between this model and this model, which was talked about in Joza and Venenet's paper, is that in their result, the unitaries that are applied are allowed to be different. Right, so you could have a combination of computational basis inputs and magic state inputs. In this case, you could think of it as every input state is a magic state, and you're not allowed to have any computational basis inputs. Okay, and one other difference is that we also conjugate the unitaries at the end of the circuit. I mean, apply a U dagger at the end of the circuit. All right, so been asked the question, right? When is this UCCC? For which use are these conjugated Clifford circuits efficiently simulable? Right, so some of the obvious cases are when U is itself a Clifford gate. If you use a Clifford gate, this is a Clifford circuit, so it's trivially simulable efficiently by the Gottesman-Knill theorem. Right, the second case is when U is a Z rotation. Right, so if U is a Z rotation, okay, all it does is that it contributes a phase, a global phase to the all zero state here. Okay, and likewise for the measurements here. So Z rotations basically do not change the probabilities of all the outcomes in the circuit. Right, so we could combine this. Any U which is a Z rotation, okay, followed by a Clifford gate, that's also going to be classically simulable. Right, so one could ask, are there other cases for which this class of circuits is efficiently simulable? And our main theorem here is that the answer is no. Right, for any other unitary U, okay, which is not of this form, so Clifford multiplied by a Z rotation, this is hard to simulate unless the polynomial hierarchy collapses. So the proof strategy, right, how we go about proving this, is to first divide this into cases. Right, so first we decompose the unitary U into the Euler angles. Okay, any unitary U can be written as product of three rotation matrices up to a global phase. Right, the first thing to notice is that these parameters don't actually matter. Right, when e to the I alpha at most contributes a global phase and will not change the classical simulation complexity. Okay, and for reasons we talked about earlier, this RZ of lambda, okay, when applied to the zero state, okay, also only produces a global phase. Okay, so this does not affect the simulation complexities. Alright, so what we're left with is this two parameter family of circuits, okay, parameterized by phi and theta. And we want to ask, like, for each of these phis and thetas, is this class of circuits efficiently simulable? So this is our classification result. We'll break it up into cases. Theta here could be either an integer multiple of pi, here or an odd integer multiple of pi over 2, or neither of this. So the C here means complement. Okay, we'll consider cases when phi is either an integer multiple of pi over 2, okay, or its complement. Okay, so it turns out that you can show that all these three cases marked P, they correspond to the cases where the unitary operation can be written as a Clifford operation multiplied by a Z rotation. Right, so the work here that we need to do is to show that these three other cases are hard to simulate classically. Right, so the way we go about proving something like that, okay, is to show that if you add the power of post-selection to these conjugated Clifford circuits, okay, you get the full power of universal quantum computation with post-selection. So if you can show that post-UCCC is equal to post-BQP, then you're done. But to see this, right, note that, right, if this is true, right, and then if the output distribution of these circuits can be weakly simulated, right, then it will imply that post-BQP is equal to post-BPP. Right, then when this happens, it causes this chain of inclusions. So polynomial hierarchy is contained in P to the PP, that's Toda's theorem. Right, and PP is equal to post-BQP, that's Aaronson's theorem. And by assumption, if post-BQP is equal to post-BPP, then these two classes are equal. Right, and it's known that P to the post BBP is contained in the third level of the polynomial hierarchy. In other words, if you can show this result, okay, then you would show that the hierarchy collapses to the third level. So this will be the goal. So case one will be this column here. It is when theta is not an integer multiple of pi over 2. So the way to prove this is to start off by padding the universal circuit. You start with a universal circuit, you pad it with U and U dagger gates, is such that each line of the circuit starts with a U gate and ends with a U dagger gate. Okay, and then any gate which is not in the like first or last layers, we will call that the internal part of the internal circuit. The next step is to compile the internal circuit using the Solovay-Kitarov theorem into just a circuit consisting of Clifford plus these G theta gates. Okay, where G of theta is given by S dagger multiplied by Rz with angle is 2 of arctangent cosine theta. Right, so this strange angle is chosen. Okay, so that for this class of thetas, when theta is not an integer multiple of pi over 2, G theta is non-Clifford. Okay, and because it's not Clifford, we also have a result that the Clifford group plus any operator which is not in the Clifford group forms a universal set of gates. So we use this property. Okay, we start with this after doing this replacement. After replacing your circuit, compiling into Clifford plus G theta gates, okay, you replace each of the G theta gates by the following gadget. So this gadget here is a post-selection gadget. Okay, you start off with a zero state here, you apply U here, apply S and the CZ, okay, followed by post-selecting on U dagger of zero. Okay, so what this post-selection gadget does is that it implements the unitary G of theta, okay, up to some proportionality constant. So what this does is that it results in a conjugated Clifford circuit, okay, with these extra post-selections. Okay, but since the G theta gates was proportional to like the J phi theta gates, right, this does not actually affect or change the probabilities. Okay, they're related up to a proportionality constant. And so this shows that post-BQP is equal to post-CCC. Right, and by the argument we gave just now, right, if you can efficiently, if the output distribution of such circuits can be efficiently simulated, okay, then you will collapse the hierarchy, polynomial hierarchy to the third level. Right, so that covers case one here. Now case two here requires a different gadget because the G theta gate, in fact, is not non-Clifford with these set of parameters. Right, so same as before, okay, we will start by padding the circuit with U and U dagger gates, and then compiling the internal circuit using the Solovay-Kitarov theorem, okay, into Clifford plus H of phi theta gates, okay, which are gates of this form. Okay, again, like with these parameters, you can see that the Clifford plus H phi theta gate is non-Clifford, so the Clifford group plus this gate forms a universal set of gates. Right, so now we apply the same trick as before. You replace each of the H phi theta gates with I of phi theta, gates of this form. And what this does is that it implements the unitary H of phi theta. Again, notice that this is in the conjugated Clifford circuit form. Because immediately after the zero state here, you apply U. And after you apply this U dagger here, you do an immediate post-selection. Right, so by the same arguments before, this will collapse the hierarchy to the third level. Okay, so this completes the classification of these UCCCs based on which U's you select. Okay, so far everything we have talked about is in the exact case. Right, there is the notions of strong and weak simulation. Okay, we have this stringent criteria of calculating this to exponential precision, or exact precision, okay, depending on the representation of the probabilities. Okay, but real-world devices are subject to noise, and so a more appropriate notion of simulation would be these notions which allow for error. Right, so the two common notions of approximations are called multiplicative and additive approximations. A multiplicative approximation just means that, like point-wise, if for all the z's, the difference between the true output distribution of the circuit and that of the simulator is bounded by epsilon times pz, where pz is the original output distribution. Okay, this is to be contrasted with additive approximation, okay, where you're just required to approximate it up to, say, some L1 distance. Right, so notice that this multiplicative approximation is also an additive approximation. Right, since if you sum over all these terms here, you get this. Right, so then a weak simulation with either multiplicative or additive error, okay, is just defined to be a classical algorithm, okay, that samples up to a multiplicative or additive approximation of the true distribution. All right, so one thing to note is that all the previous results, okay, in the exact case that we talked about, okay, also hold in the case of weak simulation with multiplicative error, okay, where C is greater than 1. Okay, and the question, the open question here is, do they still hold, okay, when you look at the notion of additive error? Okay, the best results we have can only prove hardness, but if we assume additional conjectures. All right, so I'm going to talk about hardness of weak simulation with additive error. So let's define PYUV, right, to be the outcome of the conjugated Clifford circuit. Okay, where U is the conjugating unitary, V is the Clifford circuit, okay, and Y is the outcome. Okay, what you can prove is an anti-concentration lemma for Clifford circuits, okay, which basically says that, okay, if you fix U and Y above, right, then for any constant A between 0 and 1, okay, at least a 1 minus A squared over 2 fraction of these Clifford circuits, okay, have the property that the probabilities are bounded away from this constant, or not constant, from A over 2 to the n. Okay, in other words, they are basically anti-concentrated in the sense that they're far away from the uniform distribution. They're not far away from any peak. So the conjecture we're going to make is that, okay, for any Clifford circuit which is not for any U which is not a Clifford times a Z rotation, okay, they should be hard to approximate a fraction of these probabilities, okay, up to a multiplicative error of half plus small o of 1. So if you make this conjecture, okay, then you can prove the following theorem. Right, if the polynomial hierarchy is infinite and this conjecture holds, okay, then there's no efficient classical algorithm, okay, that can sample from the output distribution, okay, which is 1 over 100 okay, of up to variation distance from the true distribution. Okay, so the numbers here are kind of arbitrary. Like if we change the numbers in the conjecture, okay, will affect the numbers in the number here, the distance between the two probability distributions. Right, so here's a relationship between a diagram which shows the relationship between the different notions of classical simulation for these conjugated Clifford circuits. Here on the top, we have like the strongest notion, which is called strong simulation. It turns out that what we showed is that weak simulation is hard, and strong end simulation is also hard. Okay, and so if you measure all the output registers, okay, our results show that it's hard. But in fact, so if you recall some of the results in the earlier table, if all you're required to do is to just calculate a single probability, okay, in other words, just measure one register, then in fact, since we showed that Clifford circuits with product inputs and a single qubit measurement in the product basis is classically simulable, okay, this implies that strong one simulation is also easy to do. Okay, and these two cases imply that the weak one case is easy. All right, so now let me just make some concluding remarks. So what the tables show is that whether we can efficiently classically simulate these extended Clifford circuits, it really depend delicately on the ingredients of the circuit. Right, and seemingly modest changes to these ingredients can lead to large complexity changes. Okay, and what we notice is that it's not one single ingredient, okay, that causes this change in the complexity. Okay, most of the time, it's the interplay between these different ingredients. And we showed that several extensions are hard to simulate classly if you make some complexity assumptions. All right, so here are some open questions. All right, so much of this talk has been focused on looking at extended Clifford circuits. Okay, but you could also consider extensions of other restricted models. Right, so for example, intersections or subcases of these restricted models. So for example, the conjugated Clifford circuits are hard to simulate. The conjugated diagonal circuits are also hard to simulate. Right, but what about the intersection of these two classes? Are these conjugated diagonal Clifford circuits also hard to simulate? Right, and that's so far an open question. Right, the next open question would be, can we come up with better conjectures? Right, for example, say in the additive case, right, can we tighten our conjecture, make it something that's more believable? Or can we just prove directly that the polynomial hierarchy does not collapse, implies hardness of these hardness of simulation in the additive case? And one question we could ask is the relationship between like these models and quantum supremacy. Right, do these models provide good candidates for quantum supremacy? So currently, most of the results focus on like boson sampling or random circuits or IQP circuits. Okay, but I'd suggest that perhaps we could look at other models like conjugated Clifford circuits, and maybe these could be good candidates for demonstrating quantum supremacy. Right, so here's the list of references, and yeah, that's the end of my talk. Thank you. Right, thank you.